for 34 years, I've always thought it was my fault. You know, when something went wrong, it was me. And then personally, you know, when you start getting to looking at it, you think about the mistakes you made through your career, things that have happened to you, the bad stuff that's gone on, and you start realizing, well, you know, good people do things for a reason.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host, Todd Conklin. How are you? Okay, so if my calculations are correct, and I think they will be in this case, I feel pretty good about this. This is the final day of September 2017. At least it is when you're hearing this, if you listen to it when it drops. You don't have to. I mean, that's not that important. They're not that timely. But I cannot believe the year has gone by so stinking fast. This year's kicking my butt too. I mean, it's been crazy. It's been really interesting. You know, I've got a troll, internet troll who I don't think he dislikes me personally, but he dislikes pretty much everybody who is having new ideas around safety. He's really holding on to the old view really tightly. It's kind of funny too. Because anytime he trolls me really hard, he puts some ugly comment on, I tend to ignore it, which is a really good way to handle that. I mean, if you ever want coaching on that, call me. I'll walk. I have the 7-second rule. Have I told you this before? So anytime somebody's kind of mean to you, generally what I do is allow myself to react to it for 7 seconds. Then after 7 seconds, I just move on because, you know, geez, life's too short to be freaked out over stuff you can't control. And so 7 seconds seems like an appropriate amount of time. But anyway, so I give it a 7-second rule. That's probably another podcast, right? And what I've noticed is if I comment on the people before the troll and I comment on the people after the troll, which is so passive aggressive, I'll just admit to it, it kind of makes it appear that I'm purposely ignoring them. It seems to be working marvelously. So that was the excitement. I mean, that's been the excitement. It's so funny to me too, because I mean, I don't want to sound smug and mean and out of context and, you know, evil and creepy and butthole-ish, if I can use that word on this podcast. But generally speaking, when people desperately, desperately fight to keep the old blame and punishment model intact, all I ever want to say to them is, you know, and it's such a smug comment, is, well, how's that working for you so far? why are you listening now? You know, how's it going? It's really interesting, and I think about this a lot, that the desire to maintain the old way is really strong, and it's because change, I think, is really hard. Even change for the better is hard, and I think people desperately, desperately, desperately want to hold on to the belief that if we don't punish people and we don't hold them accountable, then what we'll have is anarchy. The, you know, people will be running with scissors and dogs will kiss cats and it'll just be anarchy. And I get that. I mean, the world kind of feels that way. It's you know, we're at the end of September, just about to start Rocktober, and the world's pretty crazy. I mean, there's a lot going on. The weather has just been nuts. My heart goes out to all the podcast listeners in Puerto Rico now, certainly everybody in Florida and Texas. The geopolitical scene is really crazy. It's just crazy. And I get that that uncertainty breeds a need for security. It breeds a need for certainty. But the craziest thing about that is this attempt to hold on to the old view, it doesn't mean they're bad people. You know, this troll isn't probably a bad guy. What it means is they're desperately trying to make the old paradigm work harder. And that's really the discussion we've been having all along. No matter what you do, is how can we make the paradigm even better, right? And the answer is we can't make the current paradigm better. The current paradigm has probably taken us to where it's going to take us. What we have to do now is bust into a new paradigm, bust into a new way to see the world. And that sometimes I think is uncomfortable. And my guess is it's uncomfortable because there's a belief that somehow, some way, we have to remain in control. But I would think the world's teaching us, I mean, it's certainly teaching me, that we're not in control. The notion of control, it's attractive, it's seductive, but it's not very realistic. And so if we can't control the future, what we can control then is our readiness to have the future. And that's a big part of how we talk about reliability and safety too, and safety differently, and all the things that people are talking about. And it's a big part of this podcast as well. I think that's a very, very interesting conversation to have, because we deal with uncertainty. But uncertainty, by definition, is uncertain. I mean, not to use the word in its definition, which is kind of cheesy, but I just did it. Right? Uncertainty is unknown. What we can deal with is our preparation to manage uncertainty. And where it gets really messy is when the uncertain event goes beyond our imagination, an event beyond safety basis, which is kind of what we're seeing in Puerto Rico or in Florida or in South Texas, Louisiana, that part of the world. It's a big part of what we think about, and it's certainly a big part of our conversation, and it all comes back to this troll who just dings me every time he can ding me, just to keep me humble and to keep me believing that, you know, whatever I think about what I say, there's somebody out there who thinks differently. And that's all right, too. It doesn't bug me. I'll live through it, I'm pretty sure. Well, today's podcast is good. God, that's the longest introduction ever. You're going to like today. So today we're going to talk to a guy from the oil and gas industry who I think you're going to love him. I'll be shocked if you don't love him. I love him. He's almost a natural practitioner for the new paradigm. He gets this. And so to have a chance to sit and talk with him, well, that was too good to pass up. And I kind of tricked him into recording the podcast. I don't think between you and I, he didn't tell me this, but I don't think he would have volunteered for this. In fact, I feel 100% certain he would not have volunteered for this. And I kind of feel like he wouldn't have done it, but I sort of tricked him. Not evil trickery, positive trickery. I used positive trickery, but I got him to sit down and talk to me, and he let me record it. And this is a great podcast because this is a podcast from a 30-plus year in the field maintainer. So this is a mechanic. This is a person who knows how to work with metal and can weld and fix stuff, and that's what he does, and that's what he's done his whole life. And he's going to talk to you in great detail about how he sees really this new approach to safety. And I love this because this is a voice that we don't hear that much, but we need to hear a lot of, because if nothing else rejuvenates you for this podcast, this will be it. This will be the one that takes you to the top. So let me introduce, without much further ado, a good friend of mine and a good friend of the podcast. And he's about to become your friend, too. This is Mr. Cleve Bond. And Cleve's going to talk to us today about practicing this new view of safety in the real world. So without any further ado, here's Cleve.
Hi, my name's Cleve Bond. I work in oil and gas, machinery background, kind of a second line team leader now. Been doing it for 34 years.
So, and the reason that we're all dying to get to meet you and talk to you is because you have this almost natural ability to understand kind of new view safety. What is it that you think this journey means, moving sort of our approach to safety from kind of a person is the problem to more of a understand the bigger, larger context? Why do you think this journey is important, and why does it happen?
Well, it was kind of an eye-opening experience for me, and the reason personally that I fell in love with it is for 34 years I've always thought it was my fault. You know, when something went wrong, it was me. And then personally, you know, when you start getting to looking at it, you think about the mistakes you made through your career, things that have happened to you, the bad stuff that's gone on, and you start realizing, well, you know, good people do things for a reason. As you teach, you think about the context, you think about what all the noise in the room is, you know, what's going on, why are they making these decisions? Because they're doing things for a reason, and you really, that's the whole key. You got to find out the reason why. why did this person make the move they made? What put them in that situation? What did we do as managers and leaders to kind of put people in a corner where they make a decision that gets them in a bad situation?
So what have you learned, if you were going to give a hint to people who are just either working with these ideas themselves or trying to move their organization in a new direction, what tips and hints would you give to sort of get them to move away from the old towards this new idea?
So it's you teach it every day. It's all about the context. You have to understand what was going on at the time and where we were and what was going on. And I think Mr. Decker talks about it in some of his books. When you hit the point where the person made the error, that's where the investigation starts. That's where the real learning starts, and that's where the interesting things come from that you talk about all the time. And we've got to do that. You got to stay open minded enough and listen, and remember that the first report you get is probably never really accurate. You know, when something bad happens out there, you know, you come back with these initial reports, and you know, this incident went on. It's you just really have to stop for a minute and gain composure and start asking, you know, is everybody okay? Is everything all right? How do we need to deal with this? And don't just jump immediately to human error as the cause of the problem.
So this is double. This is a 2-for-1 question. Get ready. So this is very complicated. This is going to be tough. How has this changed the way you manage work, and how has it changed the way your organization has managed work?
So I can tell you it's a huge change in the way we're doing incident investigations. The learning team concept is just – It's great because I mean we had one recently with a dropped object. We brought some guys in, and one of the guys, you know, he's been doing this as long or longer than I have, 34, 35 years. And anybody knows that works in the industry with folks that have been working for a long period of time, they're kind of set in their ways. This fellow's not in love with management, you know, hates incident investigations, didn't want to go in. So he was involved in a learning team event with a facilitator, you know, 3 or 4 guys that actually do the job for a living every day. It's amazing, isn't it? You take the people that actually do the job every day, and you ask them what we need to do to make it better. And after he finished that learning event that I just about had to twist his arm to get him to go to, he came out and he called me and said, "Look, I really don't want to tell you this, but I loved it. It was great. Thanks, you know, and I'm glad we're doing it this way." And he went back for the second half, and we got some really good findings out of it. So there's a lot of power there when you use the folks that do the work to help you solve the problems. Instead of, you know, he told me to my face, you know, he looked at me and said, "I don't need you in a room telling me what I did wrong." So, let them take it and let them run with it, and they'll give you the right answer. And it makes it so much easier rather than going through days and weeks of incident investigations. The learning team tool is just great.
So you're kind of in the middle, Cleve. How do you manage up? How do you manage this message up to managers? Because to me, that's the pinch point. Because managers want to know basically who did it and how you can assure me they won't do it again, which sometimes means retraining, sometimes means firing, and everything in between that. How do you manage that message up? I think that's an important part of what you do.
So that's the hard part. Sometimes I've done it through. Sharing information just slowly, you know, go in and talk, and then when they start asking those questions, you know, remind them, because a lot of my managers have been through the same training that I've been through, but you just give them a little reminder, hey, this is very preliminary, everybody's okay, things are stable, you know, this is what we need to do. And then a lot of times, you know, you're fighting hindsight bias. When people walk in and they look at something, they say, "Look, I, you know, even I could see this. How did this happen? You know, what were the people thinking?" And you just have to put that gentle reminder out there and say, "Yeah, it's easy to see now because it's already happened." So you have to give those gentle reminders. You can't always, and sometimes you can be blunt and just say, "Hey, you know, we need to slow down a minute. Let's just take some time. Are we asking the right questions? Are we doing the right thing? Let me get through the investigation. Let us do a learning team." I've asked several times when we've had incidents happen lately, Is it okay? You know, so you got to run it up the food chain first. Is it okay for me to do a learning team on this event?
What do you do if they push back? And they do. They push back.
Well, so I haven't gotten a whole lot of pushback. I've gotten some. So I've been very fortunate with a lot of the folks. There are a few that it took a little bit of time for things to soak in, and it's not, you know, so for me, when I'm learning something new, it's a lather, rinse, repeat thing, right? I have to do it. Let me do it three or four times. Let me do it over and over. And once you go through that with your boss a few times and they see the good result, you know, if you can ever talk them into doing it the first time and they see how much quicker it is, how much more efficient it is, and the result that you get out of it, then it gets easier and easier every time. So it's, you know, you got to spend that little bit of time. You may have to go close the door and just sit down and talk and spend a little bit of time and say, hey, you know, I think this is a good thing. It's a great tool. Let's use it. Let's at least try it a couple of times.
So does it help that you're got good street cred? I mean, you've been there a long time. You're an opinion leader. You got good street cred at the facility. Does that help you? I mean, does that help? It must help both down to the workers you train and mentor and up to the leaders that you're also training and mentoring.
So trust is a huge part of it. If you've got the trust of the folks that work for you, then they're going to feel a lot freer sitting and talking to you. And if you've got a good reputation with your supervisors, if you've been a good worker in the past and you've given them results, then they'll give you the leeway to do what you need to do.
So what's your secret? I mean, how do you think trust is built and maintained and built?
I don't know. It's the way folks were raised. I always felt better on a personal standpoint if I could be upfront, just straight out talk to folks about what happened. I've tried to do that my whole career. Even when I made a mistake, step forward and say, hey, this is what happened. This is what I see. And it tends, at least in my mind, it follows you through your career, right? If you're the person that stepped up when you did make an error and you said, you know, hey, I made a mistake, even though we're learning through human performance that's the beginning of the investigation, right? But just from a personal standpoint, being truthful, straightforward with people, that's the big help.
I think when people realize they make a mistake, then that's an opportunity for us to say, you know, we know that happened. We know it feels that way, to kind of move from the traditional name and blame to the more restorative kind of help us understand what was behind that mistake. Because if we stop at the mistake, then we've just learned that you're a goofball. You're a mistake maker. And that whole notion, Decker said it a couple months ago when we were together, we shouldn't meet pain with pain. And I've thought a lot about that because I think when something bad happens, that's the first pain. When we respond aggressively and blame and sort of mete out justice, that's the second pain. And when you meet pain with pain, you're missing sort of that improvement cycle, which kind of leads me to this question. What is it you think we should do to sustain this idea? How do we keep this going? How do we build this? How do we grow more people? I mean, you're teaching a fundamentals class today. How do we get more people so they're interested in changing really the way we do work?
To me, it's kind of infectious. When you start hearing it, when the workers, the guys that I've talked to doing our classes at our facilities, you don't have to push it really hard. When you're talking to a first-line worker out there and the people that are at the sharp end of the stick, they get it. I mean, these are smart folks. They get it, and they talk about it when they go out of class. And then when you teach the next class, you see it when they come in. They're asking the questions. You can see the lights come on, you know, and it's a little bit harder sometimes up the food chain because people don't want to lose that. They don't want to lose. They feel like they're losing control. They don't want to let go of the discipline stick. They want to hang to what got them where they are, right? They want to keep doing that. So, but after some soak time, after they see it in a couple of different events and how well it works, it gets infectious and it kind of spreads on its own. I mean, everybody in our facility that's been through the classes, you know, they come out talking about it. Now, they may not be in love with it right at first, but over time, it changes, and you don't have to feed it so much. I think just it grows on itself.
So if you use your vast experience and knowledge and brilliant intellect, and you could save time, what mistakes should organizations not make in trying to move towards this new view?
So it's been developing in our organization gradually over years, right? We started using the language. We put it out in our safety bulletins. We let it flow on its own. We build it ahead of time. And then when you start coming in and teaching the classes, you remind people, hey, you heard this through these safety releases we put out, or you've seen a few learning events that we've done. And this is the same thing. We're not trying to change the way you do business. We're not trying to change, throw a whole bunch of new tools at you and work you to death. We want you to use the systems that we have in place, look at them through a little bit different lens. Let's get away from the old ways when something bad happens. How did we get that person in that situation? How did we put them in a spot where, you know, they thought that it was okay to make that decision? Get away from the blame game. And if you can just take a few minutes and take a deep breath when something bad does happen, and don't jump where it's the human instinct place to jump, then it builds on itself, and it all rolls very well.
So one last question. Thanks for your time, too. What's next? What are you interested in? What are you thinking about? What's next? What direction are you moving? Because you're always thinking stuff. I'm curious to see what's in your head now.
Yeah. I just want to see us at our facility get it all rolled out through the workforce and see how they react and sit and talk to people a little bit and see how they feel about it. I mean, so far it's had a very good reception. We just started our workforce training a week or so ago, and I want to see where it feeds from there. I want to see it grow. I want to see what they bring back to us to say, these are the things that we've seen out in the plant that we need to fix. These are where our safeguards need to be, and that's what I'd like to see what we get out of that.
So what do you think? Sorry about the levels. You know, when you're in the field recording, and plus we were in a big, well, didn't have, we Cleve's about to teach a class and I was about to teach a class. So we had to catch it like in our little lunch break. That's right. We gave up lunch, the most important meal of midday, so that you could revel in this podcast. So, you know, that's just turn me down. I'm clearly louder than Cleve because I'm a big loud mouth. I was told I use a radio voice when I did the podcast. The radio voice is probably true, because I probably sit in front of the microphone. But what do you think? Did I not tell you you would completely dig Cleve? He just understands really at a core level what this new paradigm, this new view can do at the level of the workers. And this really helps bring up the part that I think is most important, and I probably should have talked about in the intro, that ultimately what's shifting here is the way we see workers. Where once we saw the worker as the problem to be fixed, now we really see workers as problem solvers, as really a resource that we can gather and leverage and use and grow and develop by just tapping into that profound worker knowledge. The fact that there's a dignity to what happens in the workplace really makes a difference when you think about how work is done. And this podcast is a great example of that. It's a great example. There's also tons of just nuggets of learning there. I mean, remarkable nuggets. The fact that that Cleve talks about how we use the language of change to create change is really powerful. I mean, one of the early lessons I will tell you is that by understanding and using this language of new safety, you don't dumb the language down for the workers. That's a bad mistake. What you do is you use the language and you give the language a definition, you give it a meaning, a collective understanding. And then once you do that, then the language becomes really powerful to facilitate change. Because language is power. There's no question about that. I mean, we're seeing that happen everywhere. And Cleve really talks to that as he talks about the fact that you introduce these terms and then you use these terms. And then eventually what happens is you hear these terms used back to you. And that's pretty important stuff there. So that's kind of, I mean, in a nutshell, more of these would be amazing. If you've got people that work in your organization that you think would be a good fit for this, man, hook me up. I would love to have them become a part of this this dance we're doing. The podcast is doing great. I sure do appreciate all the comments I get, both positive and negative. There's nothing wrong with criticism. That's good. That keeps it growing. And the positive comments keep me going because there was a time I used to be kind of far ahead, and now I have to kind of stay on top of this podcast to keep fresh and new things for you out there so we can discuss and learn and do good work. But it's worth it. It's worth it because it builds a community of thought. It's easy. You can manage it, and I can hang out with you in your car. I mean, it gets no better than that. So that really is, to put a bow on this, today's podcast. This is a pretty good one. I want to especially thank Cleve. He was really, really a sport to do this. And thank you for listening. Keep listening. Tell your friends. If you get a chance, subscribe. That makes a huge difference. But more importantly, pass along the word that this is out here, because I think it really helps people on their journey. It's reinforcing for sure, but I also think it's probably somewhat informative. Not me. I'm not sure I'm informative. But the people we talk to, like Cleve, super informative. Until then, I hope you get what you need. That's important to me. Have as much fun as you can possibly squeeze into work. Learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. And most importantly, and for the good of everyone, be safe.
For 34 years, I've always thought it was my fault. You know, when something went wrong, it was me. And then personally, you know, when you start getting to look at it, you think about the mistakes you made through your career, things that have happened to you, the bad stuff that's gone on, and you start realizing, well, you know, good people do things for a reason. You